When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Welcome to Ask OTC, the show where we answer all of your questions from the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lars Leivatson.
Well, as you can imagine, some of these questions are about the quarterfinals of the Champions League. This from Robert. During the first legs of Man City and Arsenal's games last Tuesday, it was noticeable that the English sides enjoyed long periods of possession, whereas Bayern and Real played on the counter. From memory, this is a stark contrast with the way the English teams played European games 10 to 20 years ago. Can we attribute this shift to more tactically advanced coaches, i.e. Guardiola and Arteta working in England, or have there been changes in continental football that better explain this change? In the first leg, for example, Real Madrid had 38% possession, and on Wednesday night, they had 32%. Is it down to Guardiola and Arteta, Andy?
I think the fact that the Premier League has become an elite coaches league is definitely a huge part of that. But when we talk about the possession of Real Madrid, I think we have to say Real Madrid against Manchester City can't really be seen as representative of a wider trend or anything, because we're talking about Manchester City, who sit apart from and above normally all Premier League teams and all European teams in terms of what they're capable of doing. But on the other hand, I think it's also noticeable that if you look at the Champions League knockouts, possession doesn't necessarily equal success either, because the games are played at such an incredibly high tempo, and counter-attacking is so important. And if you think of it, you go back to the Premier League itself, and certainly if we go back 3 or 4 years, it's about fighting for the right to counter-attack. That's what the teams want to do. So I think that's certainly reflected in the Champions League as well. And I suppose, like, an obvious example of this, and this is going back quite a while now, but even as early as, like, say, 10 years ago, if we're going back to Bayern with Robben and Ribery, the treble winners, beating Barcelona very comprehensively, 4-0 in the semi-final at the Allianz of the Champions League. They win 4-0. They tear Barcelona to bits. People wonder, is Messi starting to slide from his pedestal as the world's greatest player? In that 4-0 win, Bayern had, I think, 27% possession. So I think the fact that football is more athletic, it's not just the coaches. I think any coach has to lean on the natural assets of their players. And players at the top level in Europe are faster and more athletic than they ever have been before. And that has been the case for a while.
Lars, it doesn't necessarily get you a victory, though, having the possession, as we saw this week, and arguably that is part of the consideration of Robert in asking this question. Has it improved the, you know, football teams that we're talking about, City and Arsenal, having more possession than their opponents?
Well, I mean, clearly what City are doing is, broadly speaking, working. I mean, you can count the trophies since Guardiola came in. They are on track to win the Premier League. I mean, they're favourite now to win the Premier League yet again, which, given what Leverkusen have done, makes City actually have the sort of longest-running trophy monopoly in the top European leagues, which is, given how keen the Premier League are to market themselves as like the more competitive league, that's maybe something for them to start worrying a little bit about. I think Andy's nailed it, though. I think it's less about how much possession you have and about whether you're able to control the counterattack. Now, Guardiola always wants to do that by having the ball, but also by being very methodical. In the last episode of OTC, I went on a bit of a sort of Erling Haaland-based rant, as you can expect, about how the playing style isn't really suiting him because City aren't playing the ball early. He's not getting those early balls in behind that he used to thrive on at Dortmund. But part of the reason they don't play that early ball, City, is because Guardiola believes you have to build the correct team structure. When you're attacking, you're positioning the players not just for what is optimal in terms of creating chances, but for what is optimal in terms of stopping the counterattacks when you lose it. Players have to be in the right structure when you attack with the ball, and that takes time to build and construct. If you play an early ball forwards, then you're attacking with people not in the ideal position yet, and that creates more chaos, which puts you at risk for getting a counter against if you then lose the ball. So it's all about like being patient and controlling the counterattack. And that's a way of playing that can absolutely succeed. I don't think the English teams lost this week because they had too much possession. Though I note that Thomas Tuchel's Bayern, okay, this was more even possession-wise, the game in Munich. I think that was pretty close to 50-50. But Tuchel used to be a very possession-heavy coach. If you look back to when he took over at Dortmund after Klopp, one of the things he did was make them much more possession-orientated. And that wasn't universally popular at the time. You know, they had been the heavy metal team under Klopp, and Tuchel was much more Guardiola-inspired, came in and made them more of a possession team. So historically, Tuchel has been very much like, let's keep the ball and control the game through possession. Yet now, against Arsenal, he was much more happy to sort of adjust and his strategies accordingly. And I do wonder, we can say that it's about the English teams becoming more possession happy, but I think it's also about the dominant position that they have, at least financially. I think that I think teams like Real Madrid and Bayern are more afraid of the top English teams than they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and that they are maybe adopting. I mean, Real Madrid, you could argue, have been doing this counter-attacking football for a while, but they are more inclined to adopt so-called underdog tactics now than they maybe were 15 and 20 years ago. I think that's a fair point to make.
I think you can wonder which PSG game Raji has been watching, because he asks, why are most of the players in the world still striving to play for Barcelona? It's been a clown house for half a decade or so.
Love that. Clownhouse is wonderful. I'm stealing that phrase, Raj. Thank you. What do we say it? Madhouse, we tend to say. I think clownhouse is better. And a clown car, we've learned. Was it Danny Baker who described Chelsea as like the ever-exploding clown car of football? Which, of course, they were for a while. Anyway, a clownhouse. I love that. I just think the short answer is, listen, It's they pay really well. They're obviously a club that has a huge sort of mystique around them. Barcelona is a fun city to live in. You're still going to one of the great clubs in the world. I'm not sure. Like, you and I, dear listener, might be like responsible human beings who think you should occasionally try to balance your books and try to make sure you spend less than you earn and stuff like that. And Barcelona have no such constraints. They just kind of, you know, throw money out there and then pull levers.
This is where the clown bit comes in, isn't it?
Well, actually, when you think about it, it's kind of mean to clowns, because for all I know, there may be a lot of financially prudent clowns out there. I don't know if clowns are inherently bad with money. I mean, maybe they have to buy all the equipment and the big shoes, and like there's some overheads to being a clown. But I've, as far as I know, I don't think clowns are like notorious for bad financial management.
Yeah, I think probably nearer the mark is to call Barcelona the Del Boys of European football, because they keep going in the Nag's head and go, just stick it on the tab, Mike. It'll be fine. The tab that never gets paid.
Yeah.
But by the way, there's a memorable episode where he tries to get Del Boy to actually pay up, and it never reaches its conclusion. But I think what Lars was talking about the lifestyle, is really important. Like, for example, we know that there are big players at more successful teams who would like to go to Barcelona for that. We know that's why Ilkay Gundogan went, for example. And now he's got there, he's incredibly frustrated with the culture, which is not as winning a culture as Manchester City, which is not as rigid a culture as Manchester City in terms of, you know, like the right attitude as far as he sees it. You know, I said on the Ramble earlier this week, it's bizarre. Like he's been there for 8 months and he's turned into Roy Keane at the 2002 World Cup, which you never really thought of from Gundogan. But maybe that culture starts to change with something like Gundogan, because I think what you could argue one of the issues with Xavi, at least publicly, they never look for fault at home. It's always someone else. It's always the referees. It's always La Liga not letting us spend what we want. There's very, very little self-reflection. And maybe if Gundogan changes that, and maybe it's still an attractive destination, but maybe it's a winning destination as well as an attractive destination.
This one from Diego, you might want to explain this one a bit. I saw Roma finally went from soft launch to hard launch with Daniel De Rossi this morning. Is this a good move, or has it got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Man United vibes?
Well, I think what we have to explain is the Friedkins announced, the owners of Roma, that Daniele De Rossi will be the permanent Roma coach going forward. So it was just given to him to the end of the season after he took over from Mourinho. I don't think it's gone so well. I don't think they have any other option. Now, of course, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they might have said, well, should we leave it to the end of the season? See how it ends up? Make up our minds from there? Rather than thinking, oh my God, it's incredible. This guy, the vibes, it's amazing. But I think there's maybe Lars can come back on that, but there's better on the pitch reasoning for sticking with De Rossi at the moment. Now, of course, they could still fall short of their objectives for the season, but I think in terms of what they are on the pitch, it's a lot more coherent now. So whereas with Mourinho, it all felt very hand to mouth, and when we talk about creating a feeling, well, Mourinho is the ultimate creator of a feeling above substance.
A very bad Roma. Feeling.
Whereas Daniele De Rossi, what a good feeling for them, because it filled the stadium. I mean, a bad feeling for neutrals watching it, perhaps. But Roma have become a lot better to watch. They've become a lot braver. You can see the direction on the pitch that they're going in now. And that is immensely important, particularly as they're going to have to cut costs all over again. They can't go on the open market and get Conte or whatever. That's just absolutely off the table. So I think from that perspective, locking De Rossi up and talking about, oh, well, he was in charge of Spal for 15 games and it didn't go that well. None of that really matters. We're talking about what he can specifically do for Roma. And if he makes sense for no other club apart from Roma, well, that's not really Roma's problem, is it?
What about that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comparison? Lars, you are our resident Norwegian. Is that I feel for Daniele De Rossi making that comparison, because we know how it ended for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but is that a fair comparison?
No, I think it was a very well formulated question from Diego, because when I saw there was a De Rossi question on the running order here, I was like, of course they've gotten him permanently, like his transfer, they're winning games, it's good, it's positive. But then you're, oh yeah, no, actually that is a comparison that's worth bearing in mind. I think what Andy just touched on, keen as I am to make fun of the special one, Andy makes a very important point, which was that as much as the football was bilge and the result weren't good, he was bizarrely popular. Like, his sort of populist ways really kind of struck a nerve with a lot of the supporters, and he filled the stadium and he made them excited. So when the result, but because the results are so bad, you still have to replace him, even though he's popular, because he is a very accomplished demagogue, as we know. I think the replacement has to be someone the fans will take to in a big way. You can't just bring in some sensible guy to steer the ship, because then that feels like an emotional downgrade, even if it becomes like a footballing upgrade. Whereas with De Rossi, the Solskjaer comparison is not a bad one. You're putting a lot of hopes on one guy based on a very small sample size. But I think the important point to make is that he's someone who obviously already has a huge place in the heart of the Roma fans. And I think if the great leader has had to be replaced because there was more talk than results with him, slotting in someone who has kind of instant buy-in from a large part of the fan base and is kind of can become that hero, I think you shouldn't underestimate the value of that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Yeah, this question from Drunken Trooper. What can we do with a Drunken Trooper? What can we do with a Drunken Trooper? Any thoughts on Jimmy Feline leaving Elfsborg mid-season to go to Aberdeen in the summer? Seems a bit of an odd one after such a good 2023 season and a European campaign to come. Is it necessarily a step up considering Aberdeen's recent seasons?
It's a bit harsh on Scottish football there. No, I think it's interesting seeing the way that question is phrased vis-a-vis the reaction in Sweden, really, to him, or in particular with his club, Elfsborg. Now, Jimmy Thelin, he's been at Elfsborg for a long time. It's something like 6 years, and he's done a good job there. But it's also, like a lot, like all Scandinavian clubs, like they are, you talk about selling clubs, like they are aggressively a selling club. So he's had to rebuild the team constantly. So it's a tough gig. Like you talk about there being a European campaign. I mean, for Scandinavian clubs, you finish the season in late August. You finish the season late in the autumn. And if you qualify for Europe, that's like, there's a whole 6 months. You've got to get through one and a half transfer windows until you're in Europe. So by the time you play in Europe, you usually don't have the team that you qualified for Europe with. And I think, you know, 6 years of that grind probably can make anyone start thinking maybe it's time to do something slightly different. And managing abroad, like, Sven is, of course, a very famous example of a Swede managing abroad, but there aren't that many others. There aren't that many Swedish coaches who've had a chance to manage abroad and have had a chance to manage in Britain. So the tone of the reporting and what people are saying in the Swedish press, from what I've checked, and the boss of the club, Elfsborg, were talking about how, like, this is an incredible opportunity for this. It's a chance to go and do something at a big club abroad, which is maybe because they've had a bad time recently, Aberdeen fans don't feel like they are. But from a Nordic perspective, it's cool.
This question from Tim, Andy. We were talking in the regular OTC about how Werder Bremen got stuffed by Leverkusen last weekend, 5-0. But the sub-story to this, Tim has pointed out, is Naby Keita. What happened to Naby Keita, plagued by injuries and now refused to travel to Leverkusen? Do you think he can turn his career around? His time in Bremen must surely be up after last weekend.
Yeah, it must be. So what happened is they are getting ready to go to the away game by Leverkusen, Werder Bremen. Ole Werner, the coach, has already said the week before, we need everyone on board because of the injuries we've got at the moment, including Naby. Naby Keita has been out injured for a lot of the season, quite a frustrating time since he arrived from Liverpool. And so what happened, Clemens Fritz, the sporting director, announced afterwards that Keita heard he wasn't in the 11, so just decided not to come and went home. And subsequently, Werner has come out and said in public that he was completely perplexed and upset by the decision. And the club have announced that they've suspended Naby Keita until the end of the season. And he's not welcome in first team training or any of that. I think they were already looking for a way to get rid of him, probably, because even though his pay apparently is performance related to a degree, they have signed him on a contract. They signed him on a 3-year contract, and he's barely played so far. Now, obviously, a lot of that is not his fault. And in terms of refusing to turn up, he has come out and said, well, look, no one's ever questioned my professionalism before. Without outright denying it, he's sort of counter-attacked on social media, Naby Keita. I don't think we can really say what's next for his career until he gets somewhere and starts playing. Obviously, the hope was that would be at Werder Bremen. I think a lot of people saw that signing and thought it's a bit of a step down for him after leaving Liverpool, but at least he'll get there and play. But the same little injuries have held him back. And for a player who, at his best, is so mobile, played in a number of different positions, who you want to see get up and down the pitch in a box-to-box midfield role, that's extremely damaging. He needs to, whatever's happening next, and I would imagine that him and Werder Bremen will find a way to end their relationship. He needs to get somewhere quickly where he can play a full pre-season and get himself anywhere near his absolute best, because if he doesn't have a complete pre-season, he's going to struggle again next season. And I think that was part of the issue for him at Bremen.
But why refuse to play? I know there's more than one side to every story. What do we know about his reasons for refusing to travel to Leverkusen?
Well, we're only speculating, but I guess the fact that the coach said that we need everyone at the moment and then still didn't put him in the 11, maybe after a frustrating season, that's the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm not saying it's right that he refused to go. Of course it's not, but perhaps that's the reason behind it.
I think this has Turkish Super League written all over it for Naby.
Rather that than Saudi Arabian Super League, you know what I mean? If you're still very much active and you're in the prime of your career. Anyway, from Callum, in the medium term, who will Lewis Ferguson's ACL injury affect more, the player or the club? Lewis Ferguson being the British player playing in Bologna.
Sorry, but Totten, have you done the Andy Murray thing here and you've made him British because he's playing so well?
Well, yeah. I've done the Andy Murray thing. I see. I was at Wimbledon when Andy Murray won it for the first time.
Right.
And guess who was there in centre court with a big Scottish flag at the ready, was the head of the SNP at the time. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention he is British. Yeah, he is still British, isn't he, Andy?
Yeah, he is.
Although, yeah. United Kingdom.
Although it's a blow for Scotland that he won't make it to the Euros now. He went down in the home game against Monza last week. It looked bad straight away, and his ACL injury has been confirmed. And the timing of it is bad for Bologna, bad for Scotland, bad for him, and dare I say bad for Aberdeen as well? Because you would not believe the amount of OTCers or OTC adjacent listeners who write in and go, okay, well, when's Lewis Ferguson going to get sold on, and when are Aberdeen going to get their 15% slice of the profit? Yeah. Because... he's done really well, and that could be a substantial amount of money for Aberdeen to take forward. What's clear now is that he won't leave this summer, because he's not going to be fit until October, November at the earliest, I would think. Now, there are a lot of questions here. Firstly, what sort of Bologna team will he come back to? Because they might be in the Champions League. We'll wait and see. They've got a good chance of being so. Will Thiago Motta still be the coach? Possibly not. Of course, we already talked in recent weeks about how he seems to have the agreement to go to Juventus at the end of the season. Would he have liked to take Lewis Ferguson with him? Very possibly. And that won't be happening now, of course, because Ferguson's injured. So at such a point in his career when he's had a couple of really, really good, increasingly good seasons at Bologna, that's a real blow for him. So there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment. There's an uncertainty for any injured player, but the time at which this has happened, not just for his international immediate future, but for his medium-term club future, it's really tough.
Well, thank you for listening to Ask OTC. If you'd like to ask a question, you can contact us at any time at Radio Dotton, at Andy Brassel, at Lars Severston, or at OTC Pod. And you can email us OTC@footballramble.com.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.